Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Mraz. Today's show was fuller than me after an NFL Sunday. Enjoy the takes and laughs in the best of the DA show.
Of course, we begin last night with the men's championship final. The tournament gave us the two best teams in college basketball. The tournament delivered to us exactly what we wanted, a Baylor-Gonzaga championship game. And the tournament delivered an absolute unquestionable champion last night. It just happened to be the team that nobody thought was going to be that champion. The Baylor Bears were dominant from the opening tip. And opening up that early lead and then just continuing to get into passing lanes, be more aggressive defensively and on the boards, to hit big shots from the outside and to stymie the prolific Zags offense was all types of incredible from the Baylor standpoint. I mean, the Zags had really not had any trouble until that UCLA game. The last time they didn't win by double digits was the only time they didn't win by double digits before that Final Four matchup against the Bruins. That was in game number three of the season against West Virginia. Since then, the Zags didn't have a competitive game. They absolutely throttled everybody they played. They didn't just play in the WCC. They didn't just play mid-major talent or teams. I mean, they waxed the number two seed in their region, the number three seed in their region, the number four seed in their region. Then they got to the NCAA tournament, and again, through the Elite Eight, didn't break a sweat. So once they took on UCLA in that Final Four game, it could have gone one of two ways. Either having that buzzer beater, needing that buzzer beater to beat UCLA was either a sign of destiny awaits, that they are good enough to rise up to any challenge in any team. Or perhaps it was a sign that they were getting exhausted or that team and that game took everything out of them that they had. Or it was a combination of that plus Baylor's absolute dominance. Were the Bulldogs exhausted going into last night's game? It is where we begin your cold open.
Kispert gets blocked by Vital. Baylor on the run the other way. Butler whips it out to the right wing. Flagler's three drops. Defense turns to offense. The three stretches the lead to 16. Timeout. 12:52 to go in this second half. Everything Baylor throws toward the rim seemingly is going in.
I never felt like we played with that weight all year. I always felt like we were the aggressor, and we were always, you know, I call it attack mode. And, you know, we just ran into a team tonight that was, you know, they were the aggressor, clearly.
Patterson will put the brakes on and dribble this one out. And the Baylor Bears do indeed bear down to knock off the unbeaten Gonzaga Bulldogs and claim the school's first men's basketball championship.
I can tell you that coming in the game, I had a great feeling, a great belief in our guys. When the best has been needed, they've always provided it. And I was really excited to see them play tonight, and I wasn't disappointed.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic,
Grundy.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was the voice of the national championship game, Kevin Kugler, on Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. And that was the two coaches, Mark Few and Scott Drew. Before we get to the Bulldogs being exhausted, let's get to the absolute demolition and clinic that the Baylor Bears put on. Because that, to me, was more important in the victory. From the opening tip, Baylor was the aggressor. Baylor took the fight to Gonzaga. Baylor's aggression, Baylor's force, Baylor's energy, specifically on the boards, on the glass, on rebounding, set a tone early. They also made Gonzaga look unbelievably sloppy in passing the ball and bringing the ball up. They clamped down on Gonzaga's ball handlers all night, crashed the glass, and just overall took the fight to Gonzaga. And Few said something important there, saying that we've been the aggressors all season long. They were not in this game. They were clearly on their heels. And once Baylor jumped out to the early lead, Gonzaga had to scramble. And then you saw Baylor also able to hit from three at a better clip than Gonzaga. Gonzaga could not shoot early, and a lot of that had to do with the swarming defense of the Baylor Bears. When the dust settled, Baylor had hit five more three-pointers than Gonzaga. Baylor hit 10 of them. The Zags hit five of them. Guess what? That's an extra 15 points. Guess what? Baylor won by 16 points. So just the discrepancy in three-point shooting was almost the entire difference. But also, Gonzaga's defense was an atrocity last night. You can't give up nearly 90 points in the championship game and expect to win in regulation. Baylor scored 86 points and probably would have scored over 90 had it been a close game. The Baylor offense was so good, Gonzaga could not slow them down. And by the time the Zags got into their offense, at about maybe the 8-minute mark left to go in the first half or so, it had already been a 19-point advantage for the Baylor Bears. It was so impressive what Baylor was able to do in creating a frenetic tempo for Gonzaga and forcing all of those turnovers and coming back down the floor and turning them into points. Look, what I thought you saw last night was, frankly, Gonzaga was a bunch of nice kids playing nice basketball, pretty, well-woven, fun basketball, and then they ran into an angry bunch of guys playing aggressive basketball. It was like Gonzaga could no longer play its game. Gonzaga could no longer play the type of game it played all season long. That Baylor just came out and turned it into a brawl, but also was playing their own tremendous style of basketball, and Gonzaga couldn't respond. They just could not respond. And finally, Suggs started to put it on late. He clearly is a great competitor. Timmy finally got into his flow. Kispert never really did. But at the end of it, you just saw two teams, and one looked like bullies the entire night, and that was Baylor. And I'm not sure if that has to do with Gonzaga largely having played in a conference that they could just steamroll and they could be the bullies. I'm not sure how much of that had to do with what was taken out of them with the UCLA game. It is distinctly possible some of that last night was that the Zags didn't have much left after what they left on the table for UCLA. That is absolutely possible. I mean, Grant Hill talked about how much that Kentucky game took out of them in 1992 and that they weren't right for the next week, but they didn't have to play until the Final Four. That Leitner shot was in the Elite Eight against Kentucky. They had a week to wait, and he said, we came out flat. in the first half against Indiana in the Final Four. It is possible that did draw a lot of energy and intensity away from Gonzaga. It is absolutely possible. But it's not the biggest storyline here. I just think that that game could have been played a week later. Baylor was so much more ready for the fight. Baylor looked every bit of the power conference team that wanted to take the fight to Gonzaga and did. And I don't think that changes if it's played a week from now. I don't. Now, Gonzaga might be able to handle the fight a little bit more. Maybe they don't come out kind of tired legged at the start of the game. But I don't think it changes the outcome. I thought that Baylor last night just swarmed. They were all over Gonzaga. They were in their pockets the moment they crossed half court. How many sloppy turnovers? I mean, Gonzaga had to hold on to the ball better than that. They had to be better around the perimeter defensively because they left Baylor with a bunch of open three-point shots, which Baylor knocked down. And they had to be ready for the fight from the opening tip-off. None of those things happened. And that's why Baylor absolutely deserved to be the national champion today. It was a clinic. It was a clinic. And I feel terrible for the Zags because they'll never have that shot again. They might win a national championship. They'll never go undefeated again. It had to be the perfect storm this year where obviously you're coming off a great season last year. You have a feeling of redemption that you want to start from the opening tip. You have no lethargic layover from last year because you didn't even have a tournament, so the season ended early. You had COVID disrupt things, which gave you kind of a nice break to bounce back afterwards and be re-energized and focused. You played in the WCC where there wasn't a really great second team. Oftentimes, maybe a St. Mary's can be a really good second team. You weren't really pressed like that. And then you got to the NCAA tournament as the number one overall seed, and you played in front of half-empty houses, and your sheer talent over everybody really shone. I don't think they'll ever go undefeated again because, look, it just doesn't happen. I mean, I don't think Kentucky's going to go undefeated for a long, long time again. And they still also lost. So that moment in time, I feel terrible for. They were on the doorstep of immortality, and then they just got pounded. They just got truck-sticked. Congrats to the Baylor Bears, man. They were phenomenal when it mattered most. 86 points in the national championship game. There's nothing to sneeze at.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Remember, you can always listen to the show on your time. Check out the DA Show's podcast each and every day. You can listen to the best of the show, the best one-hour bite-sized version, or the full show, full hours, all four, full foursies, by going to your favorite podcast platform, simply searching The DA Show, subscribing, rating, and reviewing. It is time for a sound check, your best audio of the day. We begin with Scott Fitterer, the Panthers GM, as Carolina trades three picks to the Jets for Sam Darnold. They could have drafted a quarterback at 8. Does this take that out of the equation?
Because I don't think you can have enough good quarterbacks. You know, if you, you add Sam, Teddy's here. If there's a good quarterback on the board at 8 or somewhere throughout the draft, you can never have enough quarterbacks on the roster. And it'd be a luxury, and then you can always do something later on if you had to.
So there's zero chance that the Panthers draft a quarterback at number 8 after they just traded away three picks for Sam Darnold. We'll get into this more coming up here at the top of the hour. I think it was a smart move by Carolina because I didn't think that what they gave up was too much. I thought that the price was right. You didn't end up giving up a first rounder. You gave up a 6th this year and a 2nd and a 4th next year. If you give up a 2, a 4, and a 6 for a potential starting quarterback, that's nothing. Sam Darnold's going to be 24 years old in June, so he's still very, very young. Again, I think he was put in a terrible situation in New York, which prevented him from really being his best self. So I think the price was right. If you are the Panthers, you don't trade a 2, a 4, and a 6 for Darnold and then draft a quarterback at number 8 when you have plenty of holes all around your roster. Obviously, what Fitterer is doing here is playing the poker game that, oh yeah, we could draft a quarterback at 8, hoping that somebody wants to trade up to 8 to get a quarterback. You're never going to say we're not going to draft a QB because that's how you would get the most return for trading that pick. So that's the play there. But the Panthers aren't looking at a quarterback. Why would you? If you were looking at a quarterback, you're not trading away a 2 and a 4 for another quarterback 3 weeks before the draft. Elsewhere in Soundcheck this morning, here's Sammy Watkins, who's now a new wide receiver for the Baltimore Ravens, playing alongside Lamar Jackson. Here's Sammy.
I'm down for it, but I'm pretty sure they definitely trying to fix the passing game. And it would definitely be fun to go in there, you know, incorporating passing and letting Lamar show the ability that he does actually have in the passing game. That's kind of what I want to come into, and hopefully we get that job done.
So it's on Watkins and the rest of those wide receivers to give Lamar Jackson legitimate help on the outside. It's something that, as great as Lamar has been, he has not really had a true number one target, number one wide receiver. How much more dominant could he be? Now, Watkins isn't that either, so the Ravens have kind of been shopping in the Walmart $3 DVD bin to get their wide receivers for Lamar Jackson. We'll see. I mean, I think that Lamar has proven capable of adjusting his game and continuing to grow as a player and turning it on when it mattered most late in regular seasons. But for Lamar Jackson, obviously, there's the concerns about whether he can do it in January. But at the end of the day, for the Ravens, it's pretty obvious that as long as Lamar Jackson's healthy, they have a chance to be one of the best teams of the AFC. And I don't think that changes whether, you know, the Ravens have spent a ton of money at wide receiver or not. But I do think it's important for Baltimore to be able to find a pairing for Lamar, namely two wide receivers or tight end at a wide receiver that you knew could win their matchup singularly, that they could go out there and beat their corners or their safeties, and Lamar was going to have great targets or great opportunities to create big plays instead of always needing to rely on Lamar's kind of magic act. And finally, here is a Jeopardy contestant named Scott, and he was on the first episode hosted by Aaron Rodgers, which was airing last night. And here is I think this is the final question, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure, actually, because he wagered $0. But either way, he ends up trolling Mr. Number 12. Get away from me, buddy. Here is Scott, and here is he making Aaron Rodgers laugh.
Scott, did you come up with the correct response? Who wanted to kick that field goal? That is a great question. Should be correct, but unfortunately for this game today, that's incorrect, and you're going to lose $0.
So he wagered $0 to make a good joke about the Packers at the end of that game against the Buccaneers, with which they lost in the NFC divisional round. Pretty good. Not bad. But there's only so many times that works. That guy, Scott, knew he was going to go viral. He knew. That's a smart guy that knows a lot of trivia. There's usually, you know, nerdy dudes that are on that show anyway. So they're playing with a full deck, certainly. And he knew he was going to get some attention for doing exactly that. And more power to you. It was the only clip that ever goes viral on Jeopardy among sports fans, really. And there is your sound check. 855-212-4CBS. Or on Twitter, DA on CBS. Mraz, I'm sure you watched the entire episode of Aaron Rodgers hosting Jeopardy last night.
No, actually, I did not, but my dad and mom would not stop with the live text updates. Oh, it was brutal.
Are they usually Jeopardy fans? I don't imagine the Mraz household is a bunch of Jeopardy people.
It's appointment TV for them. So much so that if I am ever over my parents' house and that's 7:30, it is Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune, and it drives me insane. They became like the old people that yell answers at the TV. it doesn't stop every. So last night I knew I didn't have to watch, and sure enough, I'm settling in. I got, you know, basketball on, baseball, and there's my dad live texting, "Get away from me, buddy, for 200. I'm like, freaking me out. I thought, was that a real category? I got like 40 texts on Jeopardy last night with all updates.
Not a real category. Don't worry.
I know.
Get away from me, buddy, is definitely not a category on Aaron Rodgers' first episode for Jeopardy.
It was my dad's first attempt at a decent joke. He's like, "You got to use this viral clip. They asked him about the field goal. Put it in sound check." All right, Dad, I'll let you produce the show.
Oh, so your dad, so Bob the Deli Man now, because he's out of commission for a while with a meniscus tear, is now producing the show behind the scenes, huh?
Yes, and yesterday was surgery day. So this is what he was doing post-surgery, watching Jeopardy, trying to give me some sound check clips. So he's all about it. Tell DJ Tommy D, take a hike.
Scott on Jeopardy certainly knew what he was doing when he planned that the entire day. He went in knowing he was going to do that if he didn't have to wager any money.
Of course, and especially that he wagered $0. He went for the bit. Couldn't tell you, and who could tell you who won Jeopardy last night? Nobody, but you could tell you Scott trolled Aaron Rodgers.
Zero.
I saw the clip of Rodgers' introduction. I didn't think it was that great. You know, for all that Rodgers said how great he did and how dominant he was, I thought he was a little stiff on camera.
Yeah, Mama Mraz said he was a bore. She said, "Very boring, brings nothing to the table." I said, "Okay, I'll take your word for it."
Now, it is only the first episode, so we got to give him some time.
You're right, but he waxed himself, D.A. You can't wax yourself and go with all that hype and then be a bore in episode one. You can't do it.
I know. I mean, he actually said the producers were wowed by him. They did not expect him to be that good, he said, that prepared. So you're going to have to really knock it out of the park. And I thought, and I only saw, maybe a 45-second clip of him opening up the show. I thought it was stiff. He looked like he did against the Buccaneers. A kind sir named Andrew Bogish has our headline this morning. Bogues, did you catch any of Rodgers on Jeopardy last night?
I thought about it for a second and then didn't, and then saw that clip earlier in the day, the field goal reference. I was impressed, by the way, everyone in the studio laughing at that, like picking up on the joke. I thought that'd be a tough crowd to make a field goal football specific reference, but I don't know if they were prepped, if that was a laugh track, but a good job by those in the building to pick up on what Scott was doing there.
Also, Roger saying that's a good question or that would be right or something clearly is a shot at Matt LaFleur for deciding to kick the field goal there. But for everybody that laughed, I don't think everybody got the specific reference. I think that it's kind of generic enough to where an audience understands that it's some type of shot at something that happened in one of his games, but you can't tell me that 100% of the Jeopardy audience remembers the end of the NFC divisional round game and the Packers questionably trying to kick a field goal down two scores.
No way. They knew field goal was a football term, and that's what they were laughing at.
Yeah. They knew that it was some type of poking fun at Rodgers, but they certainly didn't remember, why did Matt LaFleur kick the field goal down two scores in the fourth quarter of that game against the Buccaneers? I've been sitting on that all off season. I'm glad somebody brought it up on this game show.
That is a great question.
Kind sir, Andrew Bogish, what a thoroughly dominant effort by Baylor last night, making Gonzaga look very much unlike Gonzaga.
Yeah, it was a mugging last night in Indy. Baylor roughed up Gonzaga, and the Zags are no longer perfect. Here's their forward, Corey Kispert.
They punched us in the mouth right at the get-go, and it took a long, long time for us to kind of recover and start playing them even again. And by then it was too late.
Baylor scored the first 9 points in the national title game last night. They led 29-10, then 47-37 at the half.
That was it, right? Up 19 points midway through the first half. How do you come back from down 19? And Gonzaga had closed it to 10 at the half. But you're down 19 of the first half. You've got to somehow outscore a team that is scoring at will by 19 the rest of the way. And Gonzaga, defensively, they were not up to the challenge last night.
And they could grab a rebound. They got out-rebounded 38-22. Every time Baylor missed a shot, it didn't matter. They got it right back and kicked it out.
Yep, killed on the glass.
The three we played in the cold open from Adam Flagler, that was the dagger basically in the second half after Gonzaga had gotten within nine. That pushed the lead back to 16. The Bears then dribbling out an 86-70 victory for the first men's national title in school history. Jared Butler led Baylor with 22 points and 7 assists, the most points and assists in the title game since Carmelo in 2003.
It's just something about when we're faced with a challenge, when we're faced with a task at hand, we just know how to lock in. We know how to play together. It's just phenomenal. I've never been about a part of a group of guys who know how to lock in at when the time is clutch and it's big moments.
Butler speaking post-game on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. Macy Oteague had 19 points, 16 with 6 boards and 5 assists for Davion Mitchell. Their Bears, as Sean just mentioned, plus 16 on the glass. They forced 14 turnovers. Gonzaga now 0-2 in the national title game, is the third undefeated team to drop the final. As some expected, North Carolina is promoting Hubert Davis to replace Roy Williams. Texas Tech is promoting Mark Adams to replace Chris Beard, who left for Texas. And new Indiana head coach Mike Woodson hired former Hoosier player Dane Fife as associate head coach. He was on Bob Knight's last team and the 2002 Final Four squad. As we just heard from Scott Fitter, the Panthers and Jets with a trade yesterday. It's a big one. It's a QB change for the Jets. Sam Darnold to the Panthers for a 6th-round pick this month, a 2nd and a 4th next year, and now the Jets likely take Zach Wilson at number 2. A 22nd lawsuit has been filed against Deshaun Watson. This one says the Texans QB grabbed a masseuse and exposed himself during their session. The woman also says Watson told her she needed to sign a non-disclosure agreement in order to get paid. Reds right fielder Nick Castellanos suspended 2 games for starting a benches clearing incident Saturday against the Cardinals, but he's appealing, so he played last night against the Pirates.
Oh baby, did he get that one? My goodness.
Oh,
3-2 Reds. Castellanos, show me the money, son.
That's Jeff Brantley on Reds Radio. Castellanos breaking a tie in the 7th, sending Cincy to a 5-3 win over Pittsburgh. The Padres lost to the Giants 3-2, and Fernando Tatis Jr. suffered a partially dislocated left shoulder on a swing in the 3rd inning. The White Sox blanked the Mariners 6-0. The A's are 0-5 after a 10-3 home loss to the Dodgers. Ooh. And the Red Sox got their first win 11-2 over the Rays. Coors Field expected to host the All-Star Game this summer after MLB took it away from Atlanta because of Georgia's new controversial voting laws. And finally, hockey last night. The Leafs, a 5-3 win in Calgary. 2 more goals for Austin Matthews. And the Avalanche held off the Wild 5-4, extending their point streak to 15 games. DA, back to you.
Excellent. Thank you, Bogues. I don't know, Mraz. You go undefeated the entire regular season. You survive UCLA in the Final Four. You have your shot in the big stage, then you come up that small. Certainly we've seen the Virginia thing happen where they lose to UMBC, right. 16 seed, come back with the national championship the next year, so redemption stories can happen. But how do you go undefeated the entire way and then in the national championship game against your best foe, the second best team all season long, and you should have played them in the regular season, do you come out and lay such an egg early?
It is beyond disappointing. And we made this statement, what, last week and probably 2 weeks ago? If not now, when for Gonzaga? Because everything, the stars had aligned, everything broke right. And it wasn't like, and we talked about their conference, they still had pretty major wins early in the year, Iowa, Kansas.
They had great wins.
Right.
Great,
they were battle
conference wins.
Right. Battle tested all year long. Talking about all these NBA players, although Drew Timmy was exposed on the glass last night. Mm-hmm. At what point, if you're Gonzaga, do we stop saying, oh, what a great story. Look, now they are trying to be a blue blood. At some point, you're going to have to hang a banner and produce a national championship. And if they got punched in the mouth last night, still got that to 10, as we mentioned, at half, so you still kind of believed a little bit, and then allowed the same punching of the mouth to happen to start the second half. And I hate the excuse, DA, and I know that you did a lot in the cold open, the excuse that they had gotten out too much energy versus UCLA. It's the national championship game. You have one more game to get up for, to get up. You cannot get punched in the mouth and use the excuse that 2 nights earlier you had such an exhausting emotional win. Get ready to play. It's the national title game.
Well, I don't think it was the bulk of why that game went the way that it did. I think if you played that game a week from now, it's going to look much the same way. I thought Baylor specifically was a terrible matchup for Gonzaga because of how aggressive they were defensively, how monstrous they were on the boards, and how they just, they took the fight to Gonzaga, and Gonzaga was, they had not played that way all season. They were taken completely out of their comfort zone. So Baylor was the better basketball team, and I think they would have won that game more often than not, no matter when it was played. I think Gonzaga can still win a national championship because they do have this amazing recruiting class coming in, and if they keep getting NBA type of talent, then you know you keep this, you keep the ball rolling. My question is, you got to have a lot of things go right just to get to a national championship game, and when you get there, you're never going to be undefeated. That's one of those once in a lifetime type moments. Last night was so disappointing because at the very least it should have been a good game.
Right.
I mean, that was the two best teams in basketball all season, and Gonzaga barely broke a sweat. And for them to be just demolished in the early goings,
well,
it's gonna lead us all to wonder when we get to this point again next year and the year after and the year after, where Gonzaga is a 2 seed or a 1 seed or a 5 seed or a 4 seed, will you ever pick Gonzaga to win a national championship if they couldn't do it in the year where everything was set up for them? And not only could they not do it, they got crushed in the championship.
Right.
The worst win in Jets franchise history was last year against the Rams. It's the worst win in franchise history because they were looking at Trevor Lawrence and there was going to be no question. Trevor is the real deal. Trevor is the solidified next franchise guy. Trevor is a no-brainer. I don't see how he's not one of the 10 best quarterbacks of the NFL in relatively short fashion. Zach Wilson has questions. Zach Wilson has lots of questions. Zach Wilson did not play competition at the level of Trevor Lawrence. Zach Wilson, when he finally did get a shot this year on a national stage against a ranked foe in Coastal Carolina, laid an egg. Zach Wilson has one really good year of starting, one, not a body of work like Trevor Lawrence. And Zach Wilson also is relatively slight and lean for the position. Does his body take the pounding and keep on going? There's always been a question about Zach Wilson's true desire to be the very best. He comes from a remarkably wealthy family, not to hold that against him, but his uncle is the CEO of JetBlue, the owner, the creator of JetBlue. They're doing quite well, thank you, and his father, very successful as well in football and in business. So there's been this question about, does he love the game or kind of like Josh Rosen? Should he be graded down because he came from a family where football was not his everything? It was just something. There's questions about Zach Wilson. But the Jets are now all in. You don't trade away Sam Darnold and not go Zach Wilson number two. Frankly, I think the Jets could have collected two number ones and a number two and utilize that for all of the support you would need around Darnold, but they became enamored with Zach Wilson, obviously, and they're going to draft Wilson. So for Darnold, what do they get back? They get back a sixth rounder this year, which is basically nothing, and a 2 and a 4 next year, a second rounder and a fourth rounder. If I'm the Panthers, it's a no-brainer to take that swing. It really is. The Panthers were drafting number 8 overall. The odds that they were going to get the quarterback that they liked at number 8 were probably pretty slim. It feels like in some way, shape, or form, it's going to be Lawrence 1, Wilson 2, and then a quarterback 3. I would imagine it's Mac Jones, but who knows? Maybe the Niners throw a curveball and they actually like Justin Fields. But they're going to take a quarterback number 3, you would think. That leaves two more QBs after 3. Probably one of them drops to 8. My guess is if Trey Lance or Mac Jones, let's say it's Trey Lance, is the least hyped guy out of those 5, my guess is he drops to 8. But if you are then the Panthers, you've got to make a decision. Is Trey Lance at 8 a better option than trading a 2 and a 4 for Sam Darnold? And I think a 2 and a 4 next year to see what you have in Darnold is not a bad decision at all. Now, you have to extend him. That comes up May the 3rd. You can't really trade for Sam Darnold on a one-year deal this year. You're going to have to bite the bullet and pay him that fifth-year rookie deal, that fifth-year option. So you're going to have him under contract for 2 years to give him that space. You have him this year very cheap. Next year's $18 million. Again, I can't go crazy. You have a starting quarterback for 2 years at $22 million. Definitely affordable. Is $18 million next year a lot for Sam Darnold? Perhaps. But again, a two-year deal for a total of 22, that's the way you look at it, not a huge deal. So you extend him coming up May the 3rd. I think Sam Darnold deserves a fresh start, a new shot with a better coach and better support around him. And I think he gets that in Carolina. Note that with the Jets, Darnold never had a 1,000-yard receiver, never had a 1,000-yard running back, had two offensive schemes and two head coaches. How can you survive? How can you succeed? He goes to Carolina. He has teamed back up with Robbie Anderson. He also has the best all-around back in the NFL in Christian McCaffrey. He also has an offensive coordinator in Joe Brady, who was the architect of Joe Burrow's insane year at LSU that broke all types of records. I think the support is finally there for Sam Darnold. If Darnold can't win, if Darnold can't succeed with McCaffrey in his backfield, two legitimate wide receivers, and Joe Brady as his OC, then he can't do it. There is absolutely no excuse anymore then for Darnold. He can't do it if he can't do it in Carolina. I thought the price was right for the Carolina Panthers. I thought Darnold would fetch more than a 2 and a 4 and a 6. I think for the Panthers, Darnold certainly has a higher ceiling than Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater's fine. It's just you can't win big with Teddy Bridgewater. With Darnold, we don't know yet. Again, he's still 23. He'll be 24 in June. So you're talking about a guy who's not even 24 yet. I think it's worthy of seeing what Darnold is away from Adam Gase. I mean, let's face it. Adam Gase was one of the worst head coaches in NFL history. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I think if you were to list the 10 worst coaches in NFL history, Adam Gase is in that conversation. So just getting him away from Crazy Eyes Gase to what feels like an ascending organization in Carolina with a good OC, decent wide receivers, and a great running back, plus the Panthers still have this 8th pick. And maybe the Carolina Panthers decide if at number 8 there is a quarterback that is falling or will fall, you trade that pick away to a team that wants to jump in and grab the QB at 8. And then you pick up a couple of other picks. But the Panthers get a starting quarterback for a 2nd and a 4th next year and keep a top 10 pick this year. I'm down with it. You can try to trade Bridgewater. I'm not certain that there's a big trade market for him. Does Teddy Bridgewater maybe make a team like the Chicago Bears rethink going with Andy Dalton? Does it make maybe the New England Patriots rethink going with Cam Newton? I mean, Bridgewater feels to be an upgrade over a couple of the lower tier QBs of the NFL. Again, not sure what his trade value would be. But I think for the Panthers, it made a lot of sense. The price was right. You get a guy that needs a fresh start. And you improve the quarterback position because I do think that Darnold, even though his results haven't shown it, has a higher ceiling than Bridgewater. And maybe you get something back for Bridgewater and you keep a top 10 pick. All is said and done, I think win for the Panthers. For the Jets, I would have thought you could get more out of Darnold, but maybe he's that much of damaged goods. 855-212-4CBS, the phone number. 855-212-4227. Mraz, did the Panthers give up too much? Did the Jets get enough? Were this right where the cost of Darnold should be?
I think it's right where the cost should be, and I think it's a win for Carolina to not trade the second this year, to give them a chance to keep whatever picks they have, build properly around Darnold, and then feel like you have the team in position where next year maybe you don't feel like you needed all of those assets to lose a 2 and a 4, which obviously could potentially be two starting players. And I think on the flip side for the Jets, look, you've showed your hand now. You have the second overall pick. It seems so obvious you like Zach Wilson that how much leverage is really there to still try to get desperately a one for Sam Darnold as the game of quarterback musical chairs has kind of fallen into place. So I really do think this is a win-win for both teams. The Jets didn't build properly around Darnold, and with that, a first-round, third-overall pick deteriorates as an asset, but they still get a second-round pick for this. Forget the 4 and a 6 for a second. I think that's the crown jewel piece. So I think, honestly, this is a win-win for both teams. And you said it best about every piece they have in Carolina around them. Joe Brady is critical there. Getting him in his comfort zone with the one guy he had true chemistry with in Robbie Anderson is critical there. If he cannot succeed in Carolina, excuse time is over. And if you're the Panthers, if he fails there over the next 2 years, you don't feel like you mortgaged the future to go get that quarterback.
I think he's going to be fine. I don't know if he'll be great. I've softened my stance, and I think that Darnold will be great, but I think he's going to be fine. Yeah. I think he can be good with the right pieces around. They have good pieces around. Remember though that after that draft, Jets fans had printed T-shirts that said "Thank you Giants."
Yep.
And were flexing on the Giants because the Giants had traded out of that pick and allowed the Jets to trade up to grab Darnold, and it felt like, and I felt like this at the time, my God, why would the Giants trade away a chance at Sam Darnold for a running back and Saquon Barkley? Now, you could certainly question the wisdom of drafting a running back that high, but the Jets thought that they had swindled the Giants, and Jets fans were flexing on the Giants, and even Chris Johnson, the owner of the Jets, saying that this is the turning point of the franchise's history, and 3 years later, he's out like a bag of balls for a 2 and a 4.
I believe I said on the show that next day of the draft that had flipped the New York script. Absolutely. But again, it's the Jets' own fault. That all might have been or could have been true if they spent any cap space or didn't have Adam Gase and just properly supported Sam Darnold. They failed to do any of that. So they look so foolish now. But I still think, bright side, I don't know. I still think Darnold could have a way more successful career than Saquon Barkley, and that would be really the slap and the spit in the face of the Jets if that could have been a dunk on thank you, Giants, and they totally just botched it.
Think about how little support the Jets gave Darnold. They had a defensive coach, head coach there in Todd Bowles. They then hired the worst offensive coach, if you're going to go offense, in Adam Gase, perhaps in NFL history. They do not invest in wide receiver. They let Robbie Anderson, their only legit wide receiver, walk. And they spend all the money on Le'Veon Bell, who is washed up and doesn't want to play football anymore.
Well, and Adam Gase never even tried to use him because Gase never wanted Le'Veon Bell to begin with. So, he became washed, but Gase didn't even attempt to use him the right way. They screwed Sam Darnold. The poor guy got screwed over.
Beyond screwed. Beyond screwed how little support they gave Darnold. 855-212-4CBS. Amos is in Tennessee this morning here on the DA Show. Amos, good morning. How we doing?
A lot better than Lincoln Riley's brisket. So there's a couple things here that I'd like to get into. One, I'm not going to knock him too much because you are absolutely right. Brisket is the toughest cut of meat to barbecue, especially if you're smoking it. Second, he doesn't do himself any favors when he refuses to wrap it. I think the tray of drippings that you and Mraz were discussing, all those juices are supposed to be in the brisket, and that only comes when you wrap it. So at a certain point, and I've looked at a couple of those videos of Lincoln Riley's smoker, he doesn't wrap his ribs, he doesn't wrap his brisket.
Oh, he's got a whole video series Lincoln Riley does?
He does, yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh. So he fancies himself as an actual pit master?
Oh, I don't think so. He just shares videos from time to time on his Twitter.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't think he's shown it off, but he's definitely not doing himself any favors. Well, he's in Oklahoma, and all those rednecks out there, they know how to barbecue. And this can't be good for recruiting. I mean, if I'm a player's father and I make a habit of barbecuing, I'm looking at this saying, son, I don't know. I think Steve Sarkisian down in Texas knows how to smoke something, son. You might need to go to a different school. I mean, he's not doing himself any favors, definitely, by posting this picture either. I mean, that looks tough as Chinese arithmetic.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Avis. Well done. Nice job. You know, it's funny. I love smoking out of the backyard, you know, ribs or chicken or fish or what have you. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard. And brisket is really, really, really hard. But some of the best barbecue comes out of Oklahoma. Like Cosmos Q is renowned for their rubs and their smoking. And this dude's from Oklahoma and he crushes it. So Lincoln Riley cannot be viewed around that state fondly about a barbecue if he screwed it up that badly. Sean echoes what Amos just said. The juice everywhere is the issue with this brisket, DA. As a longtime student of Food Network, I believe he made the basic error of not resting the meat before slicing. All the juice left the meat because he cut it too soon. It's truly tragic. And that is really true. That is something that I was taught a couple of years ago. Let the steak rest. Let the burger rest. Let the meat rest. And it's such an important point. I always just took everything off the grill and then, boom, just slapped it on a bun or started cutting it up right away. No. You got to let that baby bake. You take it off the heat, off the flame, and then just let it sit. And it's hard because it looks so good and it smells so good and you're so hungry. Got to be patient with that. Got to let the baby rest. And I think Sean and Amos might be right here. Mraz, he took it off the grill or out of the smoker or out of the oven or something and immediately cut it up. And the juice went everywhere, man. You got to keep that thing in there.
Well, I love that Sean's a longtime student of the Food Network, not an actual culinary school. And also, if you notice, now that I'm really going deep dive even more, Lincoln Riley doesn't do the old 45-degree angle cut. They look like more straight cuts down, which also hurts the juice exploding and leaving. Remember, you like to cut on an angle so it kind of sits perched just so and rests into the meat.
It's going to kill Oklahoma's recruiting class. Just absolutely kill, kill the Sooners.
So, what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday, my favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
It is a Trash Tuesday, so let us know on Twitter who you're trashing. DA on CBS, I'll read through those. Also on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. All right, Mraz, take it away. Who are you trashing?
I am trashing this fascination with shows and movies having to stick to what the book says. DA, over the last couple of months, I got very invested in British high society with the show Bridgerton. Look, I don't know what to tell you. It became a guilty pleasure. And here I am getting excited. When is season two going to come back? Keep checking Netflix. And boom! A big nugget drops over the weekend. We're talking Final Four day. Everybody's pumped up. The Duke of Hastings will not be back on the show in season two. Gasp. Everybody freaks out because he is like the megastar. He's a hunk. He was such a powerful presence on the show. I love him. He's part of the reason I love the show. And it turns out, everybody freaking out. Whoa, what's the matter? Is he not getting paid enough? According to the book, he doesn't appear in the second book in the series Bridgerton. Well, who the heck cares what the books say? You established something. You established a following after season one. You can't get rid of the Duke of Hastings. Go off script. So I don't know where this book supposedly is going with this TV show, but now I'm screwed. I wasted a year. I can't watch season two without the Duke of Hastings. Get him out.
Trash him.
That deserves a trash can emoji.
You cannot be expected to continue watching a television show that you really, really enjoyed because of your love affair with the Duke of Hastings.
No, you can't, because he's the character. He was the crown jewel character. Everybody loved the Duke of Hastings. You can't get rid of the Duke of Hastings.
How about reading the book?
Oh, come on. I mean, please, that's out. I mean, watching a show on British culture is one thing. Reading a book on it is a whole nother.
Read at least the foreword.
Jeez.
What would be the last book you read?
The last book I read, I think, is still the Jorge Posada book. Although I'm almost done with a book I started 3 years ago on the 50 greatest moments in Ranger history.
Okay. Now, the Jorge Posada book was a book that I gave you for our flight to Boise, I believe.
No, it was a different flight, because Boise, I was locked in the Colts pads.
Okay.
I don't remember, but it was a flight. We've taken several of these flights. Yes, absolutely. I finished that one. Good stuff on Swisher. They hated him.
So why don't we include some of your daughter's books in this question moving forward, so you have more answers than Jorge Posada?
If
we count my daughter's books, I read a book every night.
So the last two adult books you read were the Jorge Posada story and the Rangers' 50 Greatest Moments.
Yes, yes. You think I'm reading Bridgerton Part 2? What are you, nuts? I didn't even read 50 Shades of Grey. They make a TV show for a reason.
Andrew Bogish, who are you trashing?
DA, I'm trashing the missus, although she didn't really do anything wrong here. But as we've discussed, I've been trying to eat better, working out a little bit during all of this. And the other day, I was in our bedroom where we work out, because we're we can get away from the kids, where I work out by myself. And I look in the mirror, and for a second I was proud of myself, like,
wow,
oh, okay,
nice.
You look a little lean, a little athletic here, good job so far. And just as I was about to, you know, puff out my chest and say to my wife, you know, I think this is actually working for the first time ever in my life, she just randomly points out that what I had looked at was the skinny mirror, that it makes you look skinnier than you are, which is a completely new thing to me. And she was right. I check other mirrors, and the things that I saw that made me proud in the first mirror don't exist in the other one. So I'm trashing her. I'm trashing skinny mirrors, if that's even a thing. I don't know who's making them, how they happen, but that's just unfair. You can't do this to people.
Yeah, trash them.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
Skinny mirrors and good mirrors are a thing. Some mirrors just, they're a little bit flatter perhaps, or they get the right angle. Maybe the lighting is a little bit better. Maybe they're at the right height, but happens all the time, right? I mean, if you go into a certain bathroom and look in the mirror and you're like, wow, I actually look good today. It's just a surprise. Then you go into like five other bathrooms. You're like, oh God, I'm hideous.
What happened?
You know, you ever walk into a bathroom at like a really good restaurant and there's like oak siding and warm lighting, and it's like there's a like a rosy hue around you. You're like, oh my goodness, do I look good? And then you walk into a Walmart bathroom, you're like, oh God, I'm a monster. There's that fluorescent lighting and it's like stark and white. You're like, oh, my skin looks awful. I've got sunken eyes. Oh, my teeth.
Do I have
awful.
A disease?
Oh, yeah, flies really. Everywhere.
There are flies. There are good mirrors. There are bad mirrors. And I think there are skinny mirrors, Mraz. Do you have a skinny mirror in your house?
I don't, and I'm unaware of this. And I would say this. If skinny mirrors exist, and obviously I'm going to believe bogus that they do, why are other mirrors existing? Shouldn't every mirror everywhere in society be a skinny mirror if they exist? Because shouldn't we all feel good and self-confident about ourselves?
Look, maybe they're high-quality mirrors. Maybe those are the highest quality, and instead the ones that you get at Target or something like that are fat mirrors.
I guess. By the way, how bad did you have to go to the bathroom that you went in Walmart? My goodness.
You never had to wash your hands or go pee in Walmart?
No. I think it's cleaner not to.
No.
Yeah, he just goes in his pants. Don't forget, DA. He doesn't need bathrooms. His mom's the one that goes to the bathroom in Walmart.
Pete the Body Bilotti, who are you trashing?
I'm trashing the Jets. This is an example of how bad of an organization they are with this trade. I love the fact that we're arguing about draft capital. Meanwhile, this team is turned over every 2 years. Usually a team gets turned over maybe every 4 years. And now you're putting in another quarterback who you didn't need to trade. And we're repeating this whole thing over again. Get them out. I'm tired of the Jets.
Luke, it's the trash compactor.
I am trashing how intimidated we all are by sanitation companies. Last week, we had Trash Day. And actually, it was Recycling Day. So our Recycling Day is Monday morning. And our Trash Day is Wednesday morning. We have two different ones. So I go down to the end of our driveway, and my neighbor has his trash out. And I'm like,
oh, wait a second, it's trash day? I thought this was recycling day. And then I'm like, no, I think it's recycling because we've been doing recycling on Monday, so I put the recycling out. And I look down my neighbors, my other neighbors, they got recycling out. I think my one neighbor has this thing wrong. Come down there at the end of the day because they usually pick it up really early in the morning. Go down there. And my recycling's still there and his trash is still there. So I'm thinking, my God, maybe I made a mistake. But then I drive down the block and everybody's recycling still out. And they just didn't pick it up that day. They just flat didn't pick it up. And I asked my neighbor, because he had been in this neighborhood far longer than me, because we had just moved here maybe a year and a half ago or so. And he's like, yeah, I don't know what happened. And I'm like, well, should we call? He's like, no, I don't think we can call. And I'm looking at everybody on the entire road is just bringing their recycling back. Just bringing their bucket back because they're scared of calling. And earlier when we had moved in, we had had a couple of boxes that hadn't been entirely flattened and put in the barrel. And this recycling company just threw it. The trash company just threw it in the driveway. Like, get this out of our face. It needs to be down and in the bucket. And I said, what? Did they not take it? He goes, my neighbor said, no. You got to make sure it's in with the lid closed or else they're going to be very, very upset. I'm like, did everybody just watch like two seasons of The Sopranos get really scared? Like, we're not allowed to ask what happened. Their one job is picking up recycling on Monday and trash on Wednesday. We can't even ask. And if we don't do it correctly, it gets thrown back in our face. And I'll tell you, I'm not calling either. I don't want to call because I don't want to get on their bad side. I don't want to be the house that they skip. So I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're right. Everybody just calm down. Nobody do anything rash here. Don't say anything. We need to make sure we keep these guys to the right side of this block. So I just sheepishly brought it back, held on a stinky garbage and recycling for an extra week, and then put it back down there the next week, and then it was picked up, and I just had to thank. Oh, thank you. So good that they picked up the sanitation.
I love it. So, no garbage pickup for you. 1 month.
No, yeah. I don't want to be that guy. And then I'm just living amongst my filth in the garage. No thanks. So I am trashing the intimidation of the sanitation companies.
Illegal dumping.
But then around the holidays, you got to tip them. It's like, hey, you put a bottle of whiskey out for them. Maybe, you know, you give them a little gift. Put something in the mailbox for them, you know.
Let me ask you.
Gift card or cash.
Everybody tells me that you're supposed to tip. I have not tipped now the two holidays I've been in this house, the garbage men. What do? You leave it up in the trash? What if some hobo comes by and takes the bottle?
No, you gotta be awake, ready to pounce when they come. And even my guys around Christmas time, they'll honk the week before Christmas when they're here. They give a little honk like, hey, come on out. And my neighbor across the street must give these guys, I don't know, $1,000 well-made brisket. I don't know what it is because they put his garbage cans back by his garage. They stack the orange recycling bins, push them back where they started. They almost go in his house and collect the garbage there and bring it out for themselves. Everybody else has their cans thrown everywhere. It's down the block. But this guy gets the royal treatment. I don't know what he's tipping him, but I'm going to have to copy it because he's got some kind of VIP treatment.
Papa Amendo is strict in terms of you tip those garbage men. You leave a bottle of wine out there. He's always a bottle of wine guy around Christmas. Nice bottle of wine, maybe two. Make sure those guys get taken care of. He is adamant about making sure you take care of the sanitation guys. I think he's intimidated like I am. He's worried.
That's a great trash. I love that trash.
Send us your trash. Is DA on CBS or on the phones at 855-212-4227. I think tomorrow we should wear our uniforms. You know, one of the things that we had so much enjoyment over the course of this year and the college basketball season was Super Dave yelling tacos. If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more, as his signature catchphrase. And this, of course, was said by one of our listeners, one of our callers many moons ago over why the Dallas Cowboys were so bad is because they don't tackle. But it sounded like he said they don't taco. And so we had Super Dave say that. It became a cultural sensation. It became viral. And it was so much a part of the DA show that we were actually sent gifts. Is that right?
Yes, we were. And it just shows you also how far we span this country with our affiliates. We were sent tremendous T-shirts, our uniforms that we will wear tomorrow about the Winthrop Run and Tacos. But, D.A., the spanning part is they weren't made by a listener in Rock Hill, South Carolina. They were made by a listener in Boise, Idaho, which is just incredible.
So one of our listeners, a loyal D'Alien in Boise, listened to the show, picked up on the taco stuff, and decided, I'm going to print taco T-shirts for the whole gang, for all the guys, and send it to us?
Yes, they did, and I don't want to reveal anything, but Winthrop colors, too. It wasn't like just making the drop T-shirts. These are specifically tailored to Winthrop, and I think the hope was Winthrop would make a Final Four, and we would have had them to watch the Final Four this weekend.
So we all have them in our possession, and tomorrow we will all be wearing our Winthrop Taco shirts to commemorate the end of the college basketball season. What size did our listener send all of us?
So there, Bogish actually was the point man on this specifically, but it seems like we either got extra large or large, which means...
Uh-oh, Mraz.
Things are going to be a little all over the map here. I have not put mine on yet. I am an XL in some sizes, a 2X in most sizes. So, I don't know if I'm going to look like a sausage casing or I'm going to look just right. I'm hoping that I eat well enough today that I could suck in a little sodium and be okay. But I don't know. Some of them, like Bogus, just might be swimming on him. I don't know. It could be all over the map with sizes.
Well, it also is a ringer tee. And so there are little rings around, the elastic rings around the sleeves, right? If it's a little tight for you, is it going to really make your arms just poof out?
So this is an ego flex by me. I don't mind a ringer tee because I feel like it makes my biceps look way more defined than they actually are. I don't think I put on the sleeves and you look and go, man, look at those gross water wings he has flapping around there that are all tightened. I think suddenly you look at it and go, wow, Mraz is pretty jacked up. The problem is going to be the pec area, D.A. As we often know, when the shirt comes off, I flop like Vlade Divac up top. Yeah. My front court is all over the place. And a nice shirt like that that might be too tight, it's not going to raise it up like a push-up bra on me. Instead, it's going to look like two turtle doves that have just been shot down. And I'm a little worried about the way that is going to look tomorrow.
You are wearing a Nets T-shirt now, a throwback retro New Jersey Nets T-shirt. What size is that?
This is a 2X, but I got room to breathe, D.A. I got plenty of room. See, the collar's a little stretched out. I mean, I'm plenty of room there. Plus, I could fit another human being under this. So if this was an XL, I think I'd fit okay. Again, I've been in a good flex the last couple of weeks. Let's see. It's going to be a mystery. I have not pre-tried it on. I'm going to walk down ready to go tomorrow with it on, and however tight it is, I'm going to let it rip.
Walk down the aisle with the taco T-shirts
yeah,
on?
Yeah, let's go. Let's flex.
He's going to let it rip. Maybe actually let it rip.
Literally actually rip.
If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more.
So let's see you flex. Let's see that bicep curl of yours right now for our viewers on watchda.com.
Okay.
Are you flexing or are you just bending your elbow?
That's not a flex. You just want.
That's not much of a muscle there, bro.
Well, look, I'm hitting it. Do you see a lot of jiggle here?
Yeah, get a little bit.
No, it's a snapback right to muscle form, guys.
It's a little bit of a, it's a little flab, but not much. But there's just, the point is that there's no bicep muscle there.
Well, yeah,
there's
it's
no definition.
There. It's there. I had a lot of ham and chocolate this week. It's there.
I just see armpit and elbow. There.
No, it's there. Look, you don't get a lot of jiggle. There's not a lot of jiggle.
Okay.
You're grabbing phlegm and shaking it. That is the definition of jiggle.
Oh, that's muscle right there. It fell
down. That's muscle. It fell down. Your muscle fell down?
Yeah. You know what I mean? It just, it doesn't always rise to the top. Sometimes it sinks to the bottom.
Like a wallet in a pool.
Yes. Weird reference, but yes.
You know muscles, you know biceps, they don't always float to the top. Sometimes they sink to the bottom of your body.
Are you guys pretending you have bigger biceps than me? I mean, let's be honest.
If I didn't have a long sleeve shirt on, I would show you. I have bigger biceps.
Well, I mean, yes, your arm is bigger than ours because your arm is the size of our leg. But in terms of muscle definition,
I actually have a defined bicep.
Right.
You don't.
You do not have a defined body. You have a couple pixie sticks hanging from your shoulders. What are you talking about? You poke your arm, sugar will explode everywhere.
Tomorrow, when we're wearing our taco t-shirts, I'll give you a little bicep. Okay?
All right, we'll do a flex cam tomorrow. All right. Like it's the seventh inning at the stadium.
But
I'll bring my skinny mirror so we all look good.
I'll take one of those.
I want Cap to screenshot what Mraz just did and ask our listeners, is that a bicep? Is that a muscle that fell down?
It looked like the brisket before Lincoln put his hands on it.
And according to Mraz, he doesn't have a bicep because there was too much ham and chocolate this week.
Well, and you pull on your bicep.
Is that what Body by Jake taught you?
Yeah. I fluctuate. You give me a week, I'll go back to tone.
Be a Body by Jake Cutler.
Body by Bert.
Remember to do your full body workout, but just don't eat too many ham pieces and chocolate pieces or else your muscles could sink to the bottom of your butt.
It's true. It's an unhealthy weekend. Easter was here. The Final Four was here. Now you're asking me. I wasn't ready to flex today. Wasn't ready to go. Friday would have been ready to go.
On the long list of things that you don't know is now this, where you think the meal you had yesterday is preventing you from having a defined bicep, and that by 2 o'clock tomorrow, because you had some water, you might be able to have one.
Oh, it all tightens up. You know how many Reese's Eggs I've had the last 2 days? It's ridiculous.
It doesn't matter. It would not have taken away your bicep.
Well, you know, Bogus, what they say. The Reese's Eggs go straight to your biceps. It always does.
It's true. High sugar foods hurt muscle retaliation.
Retaliation. I think my bicep's getting big.
Muscle retaliation.
Yeah. In case you were wondering if you knew anything, he just said muscle retaliation. So
what is it?
No.
Retention? Muscle retention when it rises retention. Back up?
I don't
retention.
Know what you're trying to say in the first place. I don't know what the right word would be, but it's definitely not retaliation.
It's like when it expands and shrinks. I need
well,
to
what's,
shrink
what's
back.
Your, what's your calves been after that Easter dinner?
No, I've been good about calves. Very, a lot less calories.
You taking a lot of them?
You know what's weird? I've been burping a lot less. I've been less of a pig lately. I haven't been as gassy. That's a good point. I haven't thought about that.
Mraz body by Jell-O.
Body by Jell-O. Mraz is big. Big win nutritionally is not to eat a lot after you burp. So his calories after burp down. Calves. Okay. He wants low carb content.
It's helped me lose weight recently. Absolutely. Pay attention to those calves.
And the man, too. Milkshakes after 9. Don't forget yes. those as well.
Haven't had a milkshake after. Haven't had a man since. You're right.
So that's where are your biceps then? You're doing everything right and you still got nothing.
Because I'm still having hay. Ham after Easter.
Look, you just got to limit that hay.
We'll call this the horse diet.
I want to have some hay.
Yeah.
You want to limit your hay and your hock hay, your ham after Easter and your ham and chocolate after Easter.
Forget runners in scoring position.
OBS plus, and then also hockey. You go to your doctor. Well, I just want you to limit your hockey. What is that, doc? You want to just limit your ham and chocolate after Easter. If you can limit that.
I'll tighten the biceps right up. Less hockey.
Obese plus.
Tomorrow morning we will wear said taco t-shirts made for us, designed for us, and sent to us from one of our D-Aliens, loyal D-Aliens in Boise, which is awesome. So check us out on the webcast tomorrow, the simulcast at watchda.com or on Twitch.
An ancient stunner. Oh, wow.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Some of you listening might have seen this on the news from over the weekend. 22 Egyptian mummies had to be moved from one museum to another.
Wow.
This, of course, is not something you would use a U-Haul for, so officials created a majestic parade through downtown Cairo for the mummies. And all 18 kings and 4 queens changed locations. They were in tricked-out trucks with their names written on them, beautifully designed and appointed.
Wow.
The actual mummies were kept in nitrogen chambers to protect them during the move. Organizers went as far as repaving the entire route to make sure the ride was smooth.
Really?
There were singers, dancers, people on horseback. Officials hope that the show and the new location spur some more tourism to Cairo. You can begin visiting the mummies in their new home on April 18th.
Wow. I mean, this is really an all-out affair. This puts any halftime show to shame. This puts the Emmys or the Oscars to shame. This puts, I mean, everything. Like, this looks like an Olympic opening ceremony type thing. This is incredible. Everything is lit up in the night sky beautifully. The palm trees in the distance. These modern buildings are in the distance as well. Everybody's dressed up. As you said, the trucks that they're transporting them in have like this old look of like, you know, ancient Egyptian, you know, vehicles or
yeah, there's probably a technical
carriages.
Name for them, but I don't know. They look like almost like arcs to me as well, like that you would like that Noah might have hold some animals around it. I mean, it just they're very, very fancy looking.
There's laser lights going on in the back. There's a parade before and after. This is amazing. And if you note what the museum looks like, I mean, it looks like what we build in Las Vegas for hotels. I mean, that is a gorgeous, gorgeous building. Our museums in the U.S. aren't usually that great of a building. Inside is nice, but, you know, the outside's not all that grand. This is grand. That's the type of place you go see 22 mummies. You ever go to the Natural History Museum in near Central Park? It's a really nice building. They got, like, 3 mummies in the back, top floor in the back. It's fine. But you're always kind of cramped. You got to, like, shove by people. This is, like, we're really doing it, man. We're really putting them out on display. It's like the comparison of going to a ballpark and having like your little team Hall of Fame. It's like a walkway with a couple of shelves versus going to Cooperstown. There's multiple floors. You're seeing all the busts. This is a big deal. I would go do this. I would definitely go do this. And I wonder, did they turn it up a notch because of the Suez Canal stuff? That was kind of a bad look for Egypt recently. Geez. And now you turn it up a notch and say, hey, that's not us. That's not normal Egypt. This is what we got going on in Egypt. This is cool.
Well, I think they would have to pre-plan a little more than before the Suez Canal to put on this laser light show.
Yeah.
Like it's a Montreal Canadiens playoff game. But here's the biggest problem I have with this. Why as a society do we treat mummies different than other dead bodies? We are disgusted if we ever come across a dead body and we're celebrating mummies and we're not freaked out that they're transporting dead bodies across this parade and so everybody could go look at them in a museum. Mummies are creepy. Why do we love mummies? They're dead bodies.
They were kings, though. They were kings. They've been mummified, so they've been kept in incredible condition for these thousands of years.
So what if they've been mummified and kept in incredible condition? They're not alive. It is still a dead body, and mummies are creepy, and dead bodies are creepy, and we shouldn't be having parades basically for dead bodies.
But Sean, you saw the documentary. It's one of your favorite historical movies. The mummy saves the day in Night at the Museum. If we don't keep them around, they're not going to be there the next time we need them to come back to life and save us.
I understand that. Theodore Roosevelt obviously also played a big role in saving everybody in Night at the Museum. I get it. I just, that's something to me, you know, basically it just feels like something that should be more creepy. And we just, I think people don't realize that there's actual dead people that are mummies. People give that a piss.
Well, it's a former king who was part of not only royalty, but seen as like almost beyond a human being. Like there was connection to outer space and the spirits and the gods. Like this is a godlike person on earth. He or she was then mummified to keep their body embalmed in unbelievably spectacular advancements in technology for back then in science and health. and they are surrounded by all of these jewels and gold and riches, and this is supposed to connect them to the afterlife. Like, they are not just Grandpa Joe in the community cemetery here. Like, these are very special human beings, and they were embalmed at a time when that should not have been able to be done.
So if that's such great technology, why aren't we all getting mummified? How come every time we drop dead, we're either buried or burned? Why isn't everybody mummified? Shouldn't everybody be a mummy then? Shouldn't everybody just be put up in a house somewhere and like, this grandpa, oh, they're mummies now. But being a mummy is so great, it's only good for a king from the 1400s? We should all be mummies if the technology is so spectacular.
Yeah, well, in 4,000 years, nobody wants to visit your embalmed body on your couch in your basement.
You're telling me Robin at 321's great-great-grand's grandson isn't going to want to visit Miraz, the mummy? What, are you kidding me?
And what would you be surrounded by? An Xbox? The Giants 07 DVD set? What else? Jorge Posada book?
Yeah, well, no sign of your family.
Yes. An above-ground pool? I don't know. I just, again, if mummies are that great and that special, we should all become mummies.
No, they're that great and that special because they're that great and that special. What? You want to go visit some average schmo from Tulsa? You want him mummified in his in his house?
Not an average schmo, but, I mean, how big a project is it to go to a graveyard? Now you're like, all right, I guess I feel bad. I got to get in the car and go to the graveyard now. If behind a glass case, instead of a walk-in closet, you had some relatives as mummies, if it was that accepted, then you're always visiting. They're always with you. You put them away in a separate room. People come over for a barbecue. Can I go see Grandma? Yeah, she's mummified downstairs in the walk-in closet. But instead, we're just going to these graveyards and looking at tombstones. Wouldn't it be cooler to see Grandma wrapped in toilet paper and all crusted up? I think that's a lot better.
It'd be better to see Grandma in toilet paper crusted up. Got it.
Just, again, if we're going to celebrate the technology, we should all have it. Everybody mumbles.
You know what? Just have Taylor, when you croak, sever your head and put it in that gas that Ted Williams' head is swimming in. And
I love
keep
that.
You around forever.
I would love that. I want to be frozen in case there's a chance we come back to life. Absolutely. If you can sever my head and put me on a new body, I'm in. I think that's much better than cremation or burial.
Whose body would you like to be on?
Well, obviously somebody who doesn't battle weight loss issues their whole life. It doesn't even have to be a specific person, but maybe somebody who doesn't worry about ham after Easter causing bicep flatness.
Just give me your favorite Hollywood hunk body so that quickly in the commercial break, Cap can whip this Photoshop up.
The Duke of Hastings.
No, I was going to say James Franco.
Perfect. All right, you have your marching orders, Dr. Doom.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
After Gonzaga lost last night in punishing fashion, would you ever pick Gonzaga to win the whole thing in your bracket again? 52% said no, so almost a 50-50 split. Gonzaga founded 1887, endowment $300 billion. Whoa! Could that be right? 300 billion? And over 7,000 students are enrolled. 300 billion? I gotta check on that. Notable alumni include John Stockton and Bing Crosby. Time now for your epic fail of the morning. Lincoln Riley's brisket for Easter that he tweeted out. Rough looking. Here's your fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Amos is in Tennessee this morning here on the DA show. Amos, good morning. How we doing?
A lot better than Lincoln Riley's brisket. So there's a couple things here that I'd like to get into. One, I'm not going to knock them too much because you are absolutely right. Brisket is the toughest cut of meat.
Sorry.
To barbecue, especially if you're smoking it. Second, he doesn't do himself any favors when he refuses to wrap it. I think the tray of drippings that you and Miraz were discussing, all those juices are supposed to be in the brisket.
Ooh, it's just a little dry. It's fine.
And that only comes when you wrap it. So at a certain point, and I've looked at a couple of those videos of Lincoln Riley's smoker. He doesn't wrap his ribs. He doesn't wrap his brisket.
Oh, he's got a whole video series Lincoln Riley does?
He does, yes, sir. And,
Gosh. So he fancies himself as an actual pit master?
Oh, I don't think so. He just shares videos from time to time on his Twitter.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't think he's showing it off, but he's definitely not doing himself any favors. Well, he's in Oklahoma, and all those rednecks out there, they know how to barbecue. And this can't be good for recruiting.
I don't know about the cat, but I sure am enjoying it.
I mean, if I'm a player's father, and I make a habit of barbecuing, I'm looking at this saying, son, I don't know. I think Steve Sarkisian down in Texas knows how to smoke something, son. You might need to go to a different school. I mean, he's not doing himself any favors, definitely.
This turkey tastes half as good as it looks. I think we're all in for a very big treat.
By posting this picture either.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Avis. Well done. Nice job.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Gonzaga endowment, $300 million. Million. Charles tweets, I'm trashing that damn ham that made Mraz's bicep look like the Jell-O mold on top of the Progressive Insurance commercial. Trash it!
Ooh, that garbage bag is leaking.
That'll do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti, the Wheels of Steel audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Tomorrow is Taco Day. We are wearing our taco t-shirts made by a loyal D'Alien in Boise. So watch us on the simulcast. Be good and be good to one another. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.